On our Oakland Hard Jewelers talking text line, he's the voice of the Carolina Panthers, Anish Shroff. Anish, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Must be that time of the year, huh, guys?
Yes, it's that time of the year.
That time of the year, man.
And right now, people ask me, Bobby, don't tell me we're going to finish last in the NFC South. And because they got, like, who's fighting for the cellar, either the Carolina Panthers or the Saints? That's kind of, I guess, the perception as far as the fan bases. Because, oh, watch out for the Falcons. That means they'll disappoint. And then you look at Tampa Bay and how they've kind of lived up, not to expectations, but they're kind of confident in the players that they've paid. But what is your take heading into the season? Because it's going to be here before you know it. Carolina at the Saints. I can tell you right now, if the Saints lose to Carolina, the natives, the Who Dat Nation, will be restless and want to fire everybody.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I kind of look at that game and I say, if the Panthers, you know, from the Carolina perspective, if the Panthers get off to a fast start, that could very well turn into a road game for New Orleans by halftime. And you guys know that well.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question about it. Anish, one of the things the Panthers did in this offseason, and certainly had some Louisiana flavor to it, add two big guards to the lineup. And this sort of reminds me a little bit. Bob and I talk about it all the time. Sean Payton had a philosophy of really building from the inside out with his guard play. And they bring in Damian Lewis, we know really well, a Louisiana guy, goes to LSU. And starts off with Seattle, and he's a big man, and he knows how to move people up front in the run game. And then Robert Hunt, another Louisiana guy, goes to University of Louisiana, comes from the Dolphins. And so how's that working out? I know they got the veteran already in Austin Corbett at center, but that was two big money free agents they bring in, and certainly with strong Louisiana connections in Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt.
Well, I think the big thing to remember, and you guys will appreciate this, is the Panthers looked at what the Saints did with Drew Brees. And when they built that offensive line with a smaller quarterback in mind, they wanted to be strong guard, center, guard. And last year, the two guard positions were a revolving door. Bradley Bozeman a year ago was not really a fit in the new blocking scheme, more zone blocking than downhill duo power blocking. So they said, hey, we got to give Bryce Young a deep pocket, and we need to be really strong guard, center, guard. So they spent $100 million on Hunt and Lewis, and essentially it was looking at what did the Saints do with Drew Brees. They basically took that blueprint, and they said, let's apply this to Bryce Young in Carolina.
Deuce?
Anish, how you doing, my brother? I thought, you know, I'm surprised to be able to get you on a Saturday, man. Your schedule is definitely busy.
Well, I was in Oklahoma last night, and now we were able to get back to Charlotte despite some flight delays, so we made it.
And when you see Damian Lewis, you got to ask him about exit 119. He'll know exactly.
Goodness.
He'll know exactly what you're talking about. Just remember that exit 119. Tell him you talked to some people from exit 119, and so
you know what? I'm gonna bring that up next time I see him.
Definitely do so. He'll get a good laugh out of that. You know. A lot has been made about this Saints offense and the changes. You know, you've been in a system, pretty much an organization over the last, 19 to 20 years. When you see a new head coach come in, he implements a system. Yeah. What have you seen from that system? I know we talked a little bit there just about the personnel inside out, but from the system overall, you know, when you talk about philosophy offensively as well as defensively, what, like, even subtle changes or at least playing to a team's strength, have you seen a lot of that so far? You know, because I know people talk about, well, in the preseason, you don't see everything. I don't think that's true. I think that you see parts of it. You may not see certain plays, but they've got to be practicing some of what, you know, that has been implemented. So I guess that's my question for you.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because I think this is where the last regime kind of went south very quickly, where they came in and said, okay, this is what we're doing, and now it's on the players to adapt to it. And Dave Canales came in and said, okay, let's assess our personnel. Who do we have, and what is the best offensive system to make these guys successful? You know, essentially saying, hey, we're not just going to cook a meal regardless of the ingredients we have. We're going to assess her ingredients, and based on that, we're going to figure out the meal to cook. So, you know, they looked at the offensive line, for example, and realized, hey, last year, you know, a lot of the mid-zone, inside-zone things that they were trying to do, it just didn't fit the personnel of what they have. So is there some of that? Yeah, there's going to be some of that, but they want to, again, be a power running team. What does Chuba Hubbard do best? He hits the hole real hard. So, again, you want the blocking schemes that, you know, fit what Chuba Hubbard can do. What are Bryce Young's strengths, getting him out of the pocket, his ability to extend plays? So that's why you invested the money into Robert Hunt and Damian Lewis, and then surrounding him with playmakers and stressing things like getting the ball out quickly, 2.7 seconds, things you're going to see. Hey, the first guy who's open, that's the guy you want to throw to. They drafted Jatavion Sanders, and they feel they have a way to get the tight end a little bit more involved into this Panther offense. So all those things, I think, you know, sort of lend themselves to the identity of the offense. But the big thing Canales has said is, you know, the identity is not something we're going to force on them. You know, if we find out early in the season that, hey, we're doing this really well, well, that becomes your identity, and you have to go in that direction. And the other thing, and you guys saw this a little bit with Tampa playing them twice last year, the one thing that really impressed me watching some of the tape from Tampa, his opening scripts were excellent. You look at Tampa's points per drive, you know, within the first 15 to 20 plays of the game, it was impressive. It's the balance of run and pass. And as you guys know, that doesn't mean 50-50. That means being able to call run or pass when you want to, and the defense then is on its heels. So he's a real bright football mind. It's his first head coaching job, so I'm sure, you know, there's going to be things he's going to learn along the way. But I think the two big things that impress me is he's going to fit whatever offensive scheme emerges from all this around the strengths of his personnel. He's not going to force a system on his players that don't fit their skill set.
Now, Anish, I don't know if I've ever witnessed this. You look at Carolina total defense, they were fourth, giving up basically 294 yards a game. Passing defense, they were number three. And this is the one that got to me. I'd say, oh, they probably did pretty good getting after the quarterback and getting him down, not only quarterback hurries or hits. Pass defense, they were third, giving up 171.5 yards a game. But I thought the Falcons' pass rush was bad. They were dead last and only 27 sacks. So the question I have for you, put the warning wanted sign, pass rush wanted. Out of the 10 players to have one or more sacks last season, only two remain. Now what, I would say they desperately need Jadeveon Clowney to have another stellar season, or opposing quarterback to still have all day and pick the young cornerbacks apart. What's your take on that? I know that they had to catch their attention and definitely wanting to address that.
Yeah, so I think two things. Like, one, the defensive numbers, I don't think, tell the full story, because last year the offense was so bad. What we saw in most games is that teams who had a two-score lead would play conservative against the Panthers in the second half. They would run the ball. They would play field position, knowing that Carolina was not able to put together a 12-play, 75-yard drive and march down the field. They just couldn't do it. It just wasn't in the DNA of the offense with the injuries and some of the inexperience that they had. So teams didn't throw the ball a whole lot. That's why you're the number four passing defense. And there weren't a ton of opportunities to go get the quarterback. So people pointed to Brian Burns, who was on the team last year, and his low sack numbers. As you guys know, it's a lot easier to get after the quarterback in the fourth quarter or the second half when you're winning and you know the other team has to throw the ball. The Panthers led for exactly 0 seconds in the fourth quarter of a game last year. Their two wins came on a field goal as time expired. So there weren't a ton of opportunities to do that, but there's a very, very real concern about where does the pass rush come from. They signed DJ Wonnum, who had 8 sacks for Minnesota last year, but he has been hurt. He has not been hasn't really taken part in the preseason at all. He's been hurt since OTAs. He's got a quad injury. He's not going to play for at least the first few weeks. Amari Barno, third-year guy, developmental guy, they thought could be a situational pass rusher, another guy that's been hurt. Jadeveon Clowney has looked really good in camp. He's had a tremendous preseason. All the advanced numbers, pass rush, win rate, how much you buy into that. Clowney was a top 5, top 10 guy in the league last year. but he has an injury history. That's very real. And, you know, outside of Clowney, DJ Johnson on the other side, second-year guy, didn't really do much as a rookie a year ago. He's a bit of an unknown. So where does that pass rush come from? That is a very real concern for the Panthers going into this season.
You know, the one individual has not disappointed. You know, whenever you draft someone in the first round, can they contribute right away? To me, he's been a flat-out stud going into his fifth season. Derrick Brown from Auburn.
Yeah.
You know, first round, 2020. You just look. I mean, one of the best defensive tackles in the NFL, I think. It seems like how you really stop him, you got to double-team him. That's one guy that has not disappointed, to say the least.
Anish, give you a quick Derrick Brown story.
He's a problem.
Derek with Damian Lewis. LSU played Auburn in 2019, and that was a really hard-fought game. And Damian was getting beat pretty good by Derek early in the game. And he comes off the sideline, and Joe Burrow's in his ear about, hey, listen, you got to block him. And he says, there's like two of Derek Browns out there. And Joe told him, hey, just block one of them. Keep him off
me. It's like the Rocky movie, hit the one in the middle.
But Derrick Brown's been outstanding.
He has, and he is the anchor of not just the D-line, but that entire defense. The strength of this team, to me right now, it's the defensive line. It's the interior of the offensive line. And you know, some people may not believe it, but they've got pretty good depth in the receiving room. But that D-line, they bolstered that. You know, sometimes you can get a little too cute when you're building a roster in the NFL. Okay, we have this. Let's go get this. And we've seen this in the past. Good teams amplify their strengths. So they like Derrick Brown. They added A'shaun Robinson, who, remember, played with Aaron Donald when he was with the Rams, spent last year with the Giants. He is another colossus of a human being like Derrick Brown. They should be able to stop the run. The next step for Derrick Brown, who had 100-plus tackles, which has never been done by a defensive lineman since the NFL started recording tackles, had a tremendous season. Guy was averaging 7 tackles a game as a D lineman last year. But the next step for him in his evolution as a player is, okay, now as an interior lineman, can he get a little bit more pressure on the quarterback? And again, last year, you know, just the way the Panthers were built, you could double Derrick Brown. You know, you could do things to him with A'shaun Robinson now. It takes a little heat off of Derrick Brown. Maybe freeze them up a little more, but they're going to have to get a little bit of a pass rush from the interior, and they're going to have to blow up some plays from the inside of that D-line to help out the guys on the outside, which, again, is a question mark going into the season.
Now, when you're looking at receiver, I mean, I was like, I guess you got to give up some to get something, and the jury's still out with Bryce Young, but DJ Moore was always a stud. I looked at DJ Moore was winning as a receiver. I think he'll continue to have success with the Bears. But then you look, is Adam Thielen, is he still Bryce Young's number one receiver right now? How do you break that down as far as who do you trust? Because, I mean, you just the coverage is going to dictate where you go with the ball. But is Adam Thielen, is he the guy for Bryce Young? What you've witnessed so far in the offseason heading into the season?
I think he was the guy last year. And not to take anything away from Thielen, who had a really good season, but the guys on the outside just couldn't get the job done last year. Terrace Marshall struggled. He ended up being a roster cut. DJ Chark had trouble staying healthy. He was not the vertical threat that he was advertised as. So Thielen was kind of the underneath guy in the security blanket. Deontay Johnson, to me, is the guy. I think he's going to get a ton of balls thrown his way. If you're out there thinking, hey, should I draft him on my fantasy team? Yes, all caps, 5 exclamation points. I think Deontay Johnson's going to emerge as the number one guy. You know, he had a 1,000-yard season with Pittsburgh a few years back. They got him in a trade for Dante Jackson, former LSU guy, cornerback. He's in a contract year. And there have been issues in the past with him with drops, yes. But his biggest asset, he can run the entire route tree. And he can get open. His separation numbers are among the best of any receiver in the NFL. He's going to get open for Bryce Young, and he's going to get a lot of balls thrown his way. I expect him to be the guy. I think it's going to free up Thielen to work a little bit underneath. And then, you know, that next guy, is it the rookie out of South Carolina? Is it Xavier Leggett? Is it Jonathan Mingo, second-year guy from Ole Miss who had a really good camp. And, you know, I think Mingo might even start week one because Leggett's kind of been a little bit, banged up in training camp. So I think that position is going to be fluid probably for the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season with Mingo and Leggett. And it's going to come down to production. But I think Deontay Johnson is going to be your surefire number one.
Now, when you look at, cornerbacks, I think when all healthy, that's the big question. Are you healthy? The Saints might have, in the conversation, I think, top three as far as cornerback group. When you look at Lattimore, Paulson, Adebo, Alante Taylor, then you add Kool-Aid McKinstry to the mix. But the question I have, and I think it's a lot like to do with, Lattimore healthy? Is Paulson Adebo healthy? J.C. Horn, Joe Horn's son, first-round draft pick in 2021. To me, he could play, but is he healthy? Where is he at? What's his status?
Yeah, he's been healthy, and they picked up his fifth-year option for next season. He knows what's ahead of him. And really, that has been the if that has followed his entire three-year Panthers career. If J.C. Horn is healthy, he is a bona fide number one corner. The reality is he's missed more games than he's played in 3 years. And as you guys know, availability means everything. And he just hasn't been available. And it's been, kind of a little bit of these freak injuries, right? Wrist injury, broken wrist, broken foot. And so, these things have popped up. They've kept him off the field for long stretches. When he's been healthy and when he's been out there, he's an alpha, no doubt. And again, if he's not healthy with the questions you have in the pass rush, you start holding your breath a little bit defensively. But if he's healthy and he can take away one side of a field, it gives the entire defensive staff a little bit of liberty now to scheme some things up. And, you don't feel as naked when you're sending, a fifth or even a sixth guy on a blitz. So he's a game changer when he's healthy, and I think that's one of the big keys to the defense. If J.C. Horn plays 17 games, this is going to be a much, much, much better defense.
Anish, thanks so much for your time today. We know you're super busy, but, man, it really kicks in next week with the NFL season starting. So thank you so much for all your time and your insights.
So, Anish, who's your college favorites? In these parts, we have this special show because the LSU Fighting Tigers are playing the Trojans in Vegas tomorrow night, and we got Deuce in the house and his expectations with the Ole Miss Rebels. Who do you have? Who's your highly expected team in college football?
Well, it's funny. I just watched Georgia defensively put the shackles on Clemson.
Right.
It's still early. I like Oregon a whole lot. I really do. I think Dylan Gabriel going over there as quarterback is going to be a real difference maker. I think Ohio State's got a real chance. But, again, I think the mystery in this season, I do like Alabama, but, you have to factor in Nick Saban's not there. And I know Kalen DeBoer's been – incredibly successful. I think Milroe's got a big season in him. But, again, I think the fear factor goes away when you play Alabama and you don't see Saban on the sidelines. And listen, I think Georgia has now sort of established itself as, the marquee program in all of college football. Kirby Smart is still there. I still think this thing runs through Georgia. But you know what's going to be fun with a 12-team playoff? There's going to be more teams in it. And I just think as a sports fan, we live for those moments where something unexpected happens. And I think in a 12-team playoff, there's a greater possibility of that. That excites me. I think it makes this college football season just so much more inclusive, right? Where, you'd get to a certain point late October, late November, you kind of know who's probably going to be in this thing in the end. And you kind of have an idea who it's going to come down to. And, you're like in that 7-8 range. You're like, hey, you got a long road. You're probably not going to get into the top four. Things are different now. More teams are going to get in. And to me, this is going to be a great year for college football. But I think if you ask me right now, I like Oregon. I like Ohio State and I like Georgia.
And you know what I like? And watch, it's going to be an upset because it's not a series, it's one game. You know how you look at like NBA or Major League? You play a series, the better team's going to win. But anything can happen in one game. That's what's intriguing to me. You have enough. So, I didn't expect
because
that.
Because it's like the college basketball tournament.
Yeah, March Madness. One game. It's not a series. It's one game. That's why it's more intriguing, like you said.
Yeah, and anything could happen. It'll be fun. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much. Anish Shroff, voice of the Carolina Panthers.